For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, and welcome back to an episode of Believe Knicks. We got a lot to talk about today. The Knicks came up with a big win in the first game of the playoffs against the Sixers at home. The Garden was rocking, and it was a tough battle, one we wouldn't expect any less of from the Knicks. But they came out victorious as they get ready to face tonight, game two, another game at the Garden, which should be a zoo again. But before we get started, got a lot to talk about. I just wanted to remind you, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And the playoffs have started for the New York Knicks. Just to recap, it's been a while. We shouldn't have left you without some dope takes to step to, but we're back now. And, you know, the Knicks have had a lot of trials and tribulations this year. You had a very difficult, it's been several seasons in one. It certainly feels like that. Early in the season, you had kind of, you had some struggles, very difficult schedule to start the year. You had some bright moments from Emmanuel Quickley, but the Knicks were floundering a little bit. They were at one point 17-15. That was something I think was a product of schedule. I think they would have finished a little bit higher than 500, but they decided to make a bold move. Probably the biggest move to date, besides signing Brunson, that the Leon Rose front office has made. And they are, and they traded for OG Anunoby, traded two of their most promising young pieces in Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett, and for OG Anunoby and Precious Achiuwa, as well as Malachi Flynn. And Achiuwa has been a nice surprise as well. But the team really took off after that point. Julius Randle, OG Anunoby, and Jalen Brunson, that looked like an unstoppable trio. They went on, I believe it was a 13-1 run in January when the three of them were all playing. And it was great times. And but all good things, it seems like, come to an end at some point. So the Knicks ended up, seeing some injuries. Julius Randle got hurt on a freak play where Jaime Jaquez took a charge and Randle landed on his shoulder. It was a non-shooting shoulder, but it was a dislocation. Tried to come back to no avail. Give him a lot of credit. The Knicks seemed to have that timing pretty well in hand, knowing, you know, he could try therapy beyond a certain point, and surgery would require, you know, this much time if he did have to come back next season. But no more Randle after that. OG Anunoby was injured, and the Knicks were all of a sudden in a difficult spot. It was a little bit of a double whammy with, having traded Emmanuel Quickley, they lost really their, and RJ Barrett, they lost two of their ancillary creators off the bench. And I think the hope at that time was definitely, you know, you have Randle can kind of carry the bench units when Brunson sits, but now you don't have that, and you're not getting the benefit that OG brought in terms of the defense. And it was a bit of a slog, but credit the Knicks. Jalen Brunson really took his game to another level. Answered a lot of questions. You know, heard the criticism early in the year. You know, he's good, but is he really an MVP level player? And it just seems like he's just gotten better and better as the year has gone on. And the Knicks now find themselves as the two seed with 50 wins, an accomplishment they hadn't had in over a decade. Credit Tom Thibodeau, did an amazing job keeping this team together. The camaraderie between DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, and of course Brunson has really helped set a tone. All of the guys in the locker room fit the identity, both from an on-the-court perspective in terms of toughness, as well as you know, off the court. You know, a lot of strong leaders in that room, guys who just put on their hard hat and go to work. And you know, the last trade that they did make, you know, trading Quentin Grimes, another young player, to bring in a couple of vets and Alec Burks and Bojan Bogdanović. For a time, it looked like that may not have worked out too well either. Grimes has struggled as well in Detroit, but you know, especially compared to his last stint in New York, the Knicks hadn't been getting much from Alec Burks, and Bojan Bogdanović, who has never been known for his defense, we didn't see kind of the nuclear shooting and scoring that we'd really hoped for to help stabilize that bench unit. But over the last few weeks, Bogdanović has improved. And you're starting to see, you know, this team round into shape. And I think, you know, going to game one, you know, it's always been for the last few weeks, certainly, and most of the season, as the team goes, as Brunson goes. So if I told you we're going to get an 8-for-26 shooting night in game one of the playoffs from Jalen Brunson and the Knicks would win, I think a lot of people would have been surprised. But that just shows the character of this team. They pounded Philadelphia on the glass. They got big contributions from Josh Hart, and especially a guy who's really come into his own this year in Miles Deuce McBride. Deuce has been incredible. We knew about his defense from last year. The shooting was always a bit of a question mark, but he's shooting 40% from three. He's reminds me a lot of actually a guy on Philadelphia who you hope to see back at some point this series. Well, you hope for his sake and for the good of the game, but it will be a challenge for the Knicks if he does come back. And that's De'Anthony Melton. But he gives you, you know, some ball handling, never going to be probably a full-time point guard that can shoot and is a pest on defense. And the Knicks needed, he was 5-for-7 from three. The Knicks needed all of it with Brunson struggling. And, you know, that game one, you know, you really have to credit the team's mental toughness and taking after a great coach, you know, after their coach. The Sixers came out and hit him in the mouth. And they had different coverages for Brunson. He seemed a little bit flustered. I don't think it's anything he hasn't seen before. I'd expect him to bounce back. But with your star struggling and you go find yourself down in a hole early on, especially after that Miami series, you know, it could have been very easy for some of that negative thinking to creep in. But that's not this team. And, you know, we saw it from McBride stepping up on offense. We saw Hart hit some huge threes down the stretch. And the other guy I got to mention is Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson was incredible. Before the series, you know, he's been working his way. I didn't even mention him, but that was another big injury the Knicks had to survive. Before the series, you know, he still had been working himself back a little bit into game shape. The defense hadn't been yet what we'd expected. And you know, that's going to happen, especially for a big guy coming off an injury. And he's a big guy. But we saw a vintage Mitchell Robinson performance, especially with Isaiah Hartenstein struggling a little bit. You know, that was really the big matchup that the Knicks fans had pointed to, Hartenstein against Joel Embiid. And Robinson and Hartenstein, frankly, you know, Embiid came out and he was playing really well. Had an incredible self-alley-oop, which unfortunately seemed to trigger, you know, an aggravation of his previous injury. But, you know, I will have to say, you know, Embiid is a star that's been criticized at times. You can't question the guy's toughness. You know, you want to say he flops sometimes, go for it. But on one leg, he still played a very good game. Clearly not at his full strength, but still a beast. You know, he's knocking down threes. He was taking guys off the dribble. You know, playing pretty well on defense. But Mitchell Robinson came there and with his physicality was able to cause a lot of problems for Embiid. And really on the glass, Robinson and Hart demolished a Philadelphia team, which it should be noted, you know, the Knicks built their team a lot around offensive rebounding. I believe the Sixers were 24th in defensive rebounding coming into the series. So while they are a big team and they're a good offensive rebounding team, similar to the Cavs series last year, that was definitely something to watch for going into this series. And it played out that way in game one. Going forward, it'll be interesting to see. Game ones can be a little bit weird. In any series, you know, teams are starting to get a feel for each other. That's usually the one where you'll see kind of the lower seeded team steal one. And there are a lot of things that I don't expect necessarily to continue to repeat. Let's start with Jalen Brunson. So Brunson, you know, they were sending they were sending delayed traps, it wasn't really the same thing as you've seen a lot of teams just immediately double him as soon as he gets the ball at half court. They were sending delayed help. And they were often, you know, they had some nice adjustments. There's been a lot of great threads. I think DJ Ace NBA from Knicks Film School had a great thread on it. Benji Ritholtz had a great thread. But one adjustment in the pick and roll that the Sixers started to make was, especially when Josh Hart was on the floor, simply having Hart's, you know, if Mitchell Robinson or Hartenstein came to set a screen, instead of having Embiid have to go out and defend it, especially with his mobility somewhat limited, they just had Embiid drop into the paint and had Hart's defender come help on the screen. And that, you know, that took the ball out of Brunson's hands and forced him either to go to Hart. The other thing that they were doing a good job is rear view contests. I believe Oubre and Maxey both had blocks. You know, Brunson loves to put defenders in jail, give Nick Nurse a lot of credit. They had well scouted that. But they were conceding some floaters. And I also think Brunson just missed a lot of shots he normally hits. He loves that fadeaway. He was creating space on the turnaround. And then the shots weren't falling. And that happens sometimes. But in terms of, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. It doesn't feel a lot. You know, the first time the Knicks made the playoffs under this regime, Tibbs' first year, we saw Randle really struggle after an incredible regular season. Atlanta was able to send, they had Clint Capella waiting at the rim. They were able to force Randle to get the ball out at 20 feet. Bogdan Bogdanovich of the Hawks, not necessarily known as the best defender, but with him and Hunter, they had some long guys, and they were able to help off the Knicks shooters, and they could hide, you know, Trae Young on Reggie Bullock. So there was less help around. And it's just, it wasn't playing to Randall's strengths, right? Like his ability to handle double teams, he's improved for sure since then, but especially at that time, not something you really wanted him to get the ball low or to have just grab and go opportunities, which Atlanta just took away. This doesn't feel like it was quite that. You have to give Nurse credit. You have to give the Sixers defenders a lot of credit. Guys like Oubre, they'd have some longer guys were the kind of guys who can make things challenging for Brunson. I think the idea that they lock him up is overstated. But the fact is he missed a lot of makeable shots. And you have to say, if you're going to say Hart maybe doesn't shoot that well from three again, they gave him a lot of open shots. He's going to make some of them. That's the way it goes, right? And they were helping off of him. They're helping off of Deuce. They're helping off of Dante DiVincenzo, who also had who struggled as well. I wouldn't expect that to happen again. So Knicks were generally able to generate good looks, even from Brunson. They probably have to balance Hart's time on the floor with him a little bit better. I think Deuce McBride probably earned some more minutes. OG Anunoby was quiet, although he had a huge three late, where the Knicks actually adjusted to Nurse's adjustment on the pick and roll by having him be the shooter up there at the top. It's an interesting chess match, I think, between Tibbs and Nurse. I'm very fascinated to see, but I don't expect Brunson to continue to struggle like that. I think we're going to see him come back with a vengeance. I also think, obviously Joel Embiid's health is a big, big elephant in the room. I thought he played really well. The Knicks have options there. They have Mitch, they have Hartenstein. They send help very intelligently. And I think that you'll see Embiid continue to do well. Another thing I don't know that the Knicks have a ton of great answers for is Tyrese Maxey, who was phenomenal, had 33 points in game one, and he's a blur. The guy just gets a step and he is gone. Add in very creative finishing ability and pretty dangerous knockdown pull-up ability from three, and you have a pretty dangerous player. The one guy who seemed to have more success was Deuce McBride. The Knicks threw OG Anunoby at Maxey. That didn't work very well. May not be his best matchup. He's a guy that can definitely guard quicker guards, but you probably want him, especially in this series, kind of helping and mucking up passing lanes and using his length to be disruptive there, as opposed to trying to just stay in front of Tyrese Maxey, which Deuce McBride was much better at, I thought. I think the Stars are going to have a good game too. I think they're going to be here this series. And then there's some X factors. I think Kelly Oubre made some plays. That is a guy for Philadelphia is a huge X factor, especially if they're not going to put OG on him. If he has a little bit of height advantage on Josh Hart if that's the matchup. He's got.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Length, athleticism, energy, and if he gets hot from three, he's a guy who can score in bunches. And his defensive effort, I think, has been much better this year than anywhere previously in his career. So he's an interesting X factor. You know, Paul Reed was pretty quiet in game one after not being so quiet on the podcast. I think, you know, Paul Reed said, you know, the Knicks are the easier team. And there was, you know, there was a little bit of controversy over that, but you know, they haven't proven to be as good as Boston. So I didn't think those comments were too controversial, but I do think that that he was outplayed when he was on the floor with Mitch, and that matters. And I, you know, I think the Sixers are going to spend time working on the offensive rebounding. But when you're sending that much, or when the defensive rebounding, excuse me, you're sending that much help at Brunson, you know, you're contesting these shots. You know, and you have 10 eyes on him every time, you are going to be a little vulnerable on the glass unless you're keeping track of that. So, you know, I think the floaters are there for both. I don't think Deuce McBride really has a floater. That's something that he should definitely work on this offseason, but that mid-range is something that Philadelphia is going to have to concede. I think Brunson can just be a little bit more mindful on the rear view contest, and he'll be fine. And then the other thing you have to talk about, the Knicks shot 16 for 36 from three. So a lot of people in Sixer Nation are saying, well, even, you know, granted, sure, a lot of them were good looks, certainly not that last hard three, but you know, it may be unreasonable to expect the Knicks to shoot that well again, but they also shot very poorly from two, and some of that was definitely, you know, The heuristic is, yeah, two-point defense tends to be much more within a defense's control than three-point defense, at least in terms of accuracy percentages, right? If you're not limiting the attempts, then you know, that is bad three-point defense. But generally, but you know, it's worth noting the Knicks missed a lot of good looks, and I think you know, especially Brunson, you'd have to expect that it'll come out a little bit better. OG Anunoby was very quiet. I'd expect him to have a bigger game. You know, so I think on both sides, there's reasons for teams to be encouraged. Philadelphia, I think the biggest worry is Embiid's health, and for the Knicks, it would be bench creation, but you have to give Bojan Bogdanović a lot of credit too. You know, he didn't shoot the ball that well, but it's tough buckets. And on that bench unit, you know, they have some talented guys. McBride's a shooter. You know, if you're playing a guy like Hart with them, he can get the ball in transition. He's a good offensive rebounder. But that bench sometimes is just going to need some time to hit tough buckets. They're not going to always be able to generate a ton of dribble penetration. They're not going to be able to, you know, they don't have the kind of spacing that is going to, like, really compromise teams to generate those easy opportunities. They're going to have to get in transition. And they're going to need someone in the half court who can take and make contested shots. And that's what Bogdanović, that's what they got him here for. This is a guy, you know, who's shooting 62% shooting in Detroit, shooting over 40% from three and 20 points a game. And, you know, Cade Cunningham's a really good player, but Detroit didn't really have many offensive threats. And Bogdanović was asked. And you know, I do want to talk a little bit about this. There was a lot of criticism that came his way. Or, you know, the Knicks way, you know, he was struggling, wasn't shooting the ball particularly well. I don't think he was ever shooting the ball that poorly, but he was down to 36-37% from three, which is not bad. But when it is your main kind of contribution to the team, you know, you need to be shooting the ball at a high level, right? Especially since you're no longer being asked to create quite as much. But he did struggle. And I think people have mentioned this, right? You're going from starting on one of the two or three worst teams in the league, doesn't really have playoff aspirations, to now coming off the bench and being an energy guy for, you know, a team that has contention aspirations, right? At least we think they should make the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm sure the guys in that locker room have their sights even higher. And it took some time for Bogdanovich to get comfortable, but I think he does look a lot more comfortable, especially in this offense, which, you know, I think the Knicks have a pretty unique offense where they definitely set up some ball movement stuff for guys like, you know, off-ball stuff for guys like DiVincenzo, which we hadn't seen as much from Tibbs in previous years. Bogdanovich has done some of that, but it's also an offense that can be stagnant at times and relies a lot on ball screens. And, you know, it takes time from, you know, an offense coming from an offense like Detroit. And the other thing is a commitment on defensive end. He probably wasn't Bogdanovich having to shoulder an offensive load on a team that wasn't really winning a lot of games. The defensive, you know, the expectation, I'm not going to criticize Detroit, but it is a different level here. It's going to be a different level on any team that's competing, and especially in the playoffs. And, you know, he's never going to be confused for OG Anunoby on defense, but his compete level has definitely improved since he's come over from Detroit. And that's something you have to be enthused about. And that is, he might be the Knicks X factor in this series. You know, you talk about guys like Oubre. We'll see if they get Melton back. The Sixers do have some depth and some dangerous guys beyond the two stars. But the Knicks, that's how they won game one in many ways, is the other guys, quote unquote, stepped up that weren't Brunson. You know, McBride was the guy, especially after last year, you saw Quickly and Grimes. Quickly had played against Atlanta, but not heavy minutes. You know, this was really his first extended experience in the playoffs last year, Grimes as well. And we saw that, you know, they really both struggled to shoot the ball, even on pretty wide open looks. You know, that could be randomness. I do think one thing that helps Deuce is, especially compared to he has a quicker release than I think Grimes, and I think he has a higher release than Quickly, so he's able to get shots off against contests, and that's huge in the playoffs. You know, Quickly gives you a lot more in terms of being able to create, do things off the dribble. McBride probably needs to work on his ball handling; isn't quite as sudden as Quickly, but he can get shots off. And you know, there's this famous talk from the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference for Bob Myers, former GM of the or former president of the Warriors. He's talking about the playoffs, right? And he's talking about, you know, the playoffs is just a completely different game. I mean, he's talking with Paul Pierce, and he's like, you know, if I ask Paul during a regular season, he's walking in the locker room like, hey, who do I got tonight? What? But in the playoffs, he knows, and he knows exactly all the tendencies. So if you can't go left, they are playing you to your left. We get 2 feet of, this is the quote that I think is most pertinent. We get 2 feet of space in the regular season on a three, that turns into 2 inches in the playoffs. And Deuce, appropriately enough, is a 2-inch player, or it looked like it for sure in game one. And it's something that I think is pretty, it seems like something that he should be able to replicate, maybe not 5 or 7 every time, but he has a high release and he has a quick release. He's got long arms, so despite being a little bit smaller, he makes up for that in a variety of ways. Bogdanovich, we've seen him. This is a guy who he's a shooter, so we know that he's gonna have some cold nights. He is a guy that can't generate a ton of easy looks for himself, but he's composed off the dribble. He's been doing a good job with his pump fakes, making quick decisions. I think, you know, we'll see if Philadelphia is able to attack him a little bit more. I think there are some Sixers fans who are probably fairly complaining that he was allowed to get physical, but that is the playoffs. For what it's worth, I would rather see him play hard and maybe commit some fouls than maybe what we saw the first couple of weeks, where, you know, he hadn't gotten out of that the lottery brain yet, so to speak. But I think you know, Mitch looked as good as he's looked since he's coming back. You know, we've already seen him swing a playoff series last year against Cleveland. You know, Hartenstein was great in that too. They both dominated the bigs, but coming into that series, no one would have said Jared Allen. People would have said that was an advantage, Jared Allen over Mitchell Robinson. And he completely flipped that narrative on its head and was absolutely dominant. And we saw the same thing in game one against Joel Embiid, and you know, a diminished Joel Embiid, sure. But, you know, he really took advantage of them on the glass, even made 2 free throws after Hack-a-Shaq. So, you know, this is really a team built to win. I mean, even if they have an off night from their two top scorers, really three if you look at OG, but OG, Dante, Brunson, this is a team built to withstand off nights. Can they go far? No. If Brunson shoots 8 for 26, I don't know if they can even win this series, let alone against the Pacers or, God forbid, Boston. Right? They're going to need much more from Brunson. But I think what feels different about this year, especially from that Miami series where Brunson was awesome, is you have other guys that can step up. I think that's kind of the, you know, before the series, you heard from Shaquille O'Neal, you know, he said, I would just trap Brunson, right? Which, if you watch the Knicks, this is, I mean, what an amazing insight, right? Just double team the guy. I'm sure no one has ever thought of that. Well, 29 coaches have, and we've seen it. We've seen him see box and ones in the regular season. The Sixers had a box and one. It's nothing he hasn't seen, but the idea has always been get the ball out of his hands and into the hands of other players. And last year, you know, you had Randall, who was clearly not healthy. You had Quickly and Grimes struggling to shoot and then Quickly got injured. RJ Barrett had a really good couple of series, but towards the end of the last game, game six against Miami, he struggled. And it's still not a guy who's ideally a catch and shoot guy, right? So I think he was most successful when the other teams threw lengthy guys at Brunson, whether it was Jimmy Butler in round two or Okoro in round one, and then RJ would have a guard matched up on him. You know, he was abusing Vincent, he was abusing Garland. He was too big. But once the Heat went away from that, he was not quite as effective. And it was just, Brunson is going to score a ton of points, but no one else can do anything. And this year, I think it's a little bit different. If you try to get the ball out of Brunson's hands, Dante will make you pay. Deuce will make you pay. OG will make you pay. Bogdanovich, right? I don't know. I don't think Bogdanovich is going to play heavy minutes, but that's another shooter. Hartenstein now probably has added to his offensive game. He has that little floater. You trap and he gets the ball. You know, Mitch is not quite as dynamic in those 4-on-3 situations. Hartenstein has been able to carve him up, especially with more shooters. So it feels different from last year in that sense. And, I think game one, as much as people might want to say it's a fluke or Josh Hart is going to shoot that well, this is a team built to exploit teams that are going to overplay Brunson. And if you let him beat you 1-on-1, they've shown they can win like that too. You better have a good offensive game because he's going to score. And if you lock up the other guys and you say, we'll give you all as many points as you want, maybe that's the better way to go. I don't know. But this team does pose a lot of problems and they're a serious contender. And we saw that in game one. Things I would look for tonight. I am very curious to see if Nurse throws another curveball with Brunson probably adapting to a lot of that defensive coverage in game one. We saw the Knicks counter what the Sixers were doing in terms of having Hart's guy slide down. We saw them generate an open three for OG, countering that. How aggressive do they play with Embiid in pick and roll defense? If they can't go to those kind of counters, what is Hart? For a couple quarters, like Hart was more quiet. He needs to be an offensive threat. Whether that's getting to the rim and transition, he had a fantastic take on Embiid. Which maybe if Embiid's fully healthy, that gets blocked, but he went right into his chest in transition and finished it, which is not easy. So you love to see that aggression. You're going to need to see more of it, and he'll need to have a quick trigger. And you miss shots. You got to live with it. But given the way this team defends, you can't be scared of taking those. Given the way this team can rebound, you can't be scared of taking those. And but there's a lot to feel good about. I think they're just this is a team where they're going to, you take away one thing and there are other things they can do, which wasn't necessarily the case last year. And it might be down to the point that you just need to say, live with Brunson cooking you. They don't really have any. I mean, I thought Maxi did a good job. They might throw Oubre on him, but I don't know if you can leave Maxi on OG Anunoby or Hart. And the Knicks can, of course, if you wanted to cross match, that leaves you open to offensive rebounding. And the Heat, I think, won. Probably the most underrated thing they did do was cleaning up the glass. I mean, Bam Adebayo was a great player. I thought Kevin Love going to that series. I thought, well, if I saw what Mitch did to those much hyped Cleveland bigs, if they try to put Kevin Love in there and it's Hartenstein or Mitch, he's getting beat up on the glass. But Kevin Love has always been an elite defensive rebounder, and even as he's aged, that remains true. And Philadelphia right now didn't do that game one. Let's see if they'll improve. But they don't have, Nick Nurse talked about maybe playing Paul Reed, which that is going to make it a lot easier for the Knicks to play Hart. So it might help shore up the defensive glass, but it's going to compromise their spacing. And we know that the Knicks can still win those kind of games if it's low scoring. Your better bet is probably to try to play a five out, let Maxey continue to cook and hope you get hot from three. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Knicks move around. Precious Achiuwa didn't play in, the Knicks and Sixers move around these chess pieces. Precious Achiuwa didn't play in game one. So it looks like Tibbs may have committed to an 8-man rotation. I would expect, given how effective Embiid is at drawing fouls, that we will probably have to see at least a cameo from Precious at one point. The Knicks were fortunate to avoid foul trouble for the most part. Embiid shot a lot of free throws, but either Mitch or Hartenstein was really in any serious foul trouble. I would imagine that happens at some point during the series. You might see Precious, and we'll see. Can you be ready when your number is called? It's another guy who's had his ups and downs. Has been, I think, much better than a lot of fans expected when the trade was made. He was kind of thought of as almost an afterthought. He's given them, you know, I think they should re-sign him, even if they keep both the other centers, which we'll see what they do there. But, you know, does Precious end up getting minutes today? Can Deuce continue to play hard? Do the Hart minutes change if Philadelphia continues to help off of him? And especially if McBride is playing so well, or if OG, you know, comes alive in a way that he didn't. Would he go small? He's used that. Tibbs has been, I think, more willing to go to Deuce, Dante, and Brunson together. And if Deuce continues to play this way and is one of their better defenders, and maybe the only guy who can really stay in front of Maxey, do you go to that more and live with, okay, maybe I have to put DiVincenzo on Kelly Oubre, but I would rather take my chances there than compromise spacing and not have a guy to stop Maxey. A lot of fascinating questions. I think it's been an awesome year. I think the Knicks, we'll see what happens with Brunson. I know first team All-NBA, second team All-NBA seems to be right on the cusp. I think he's deserving, you look at the other players, you know, in that top 10, 15 conversation, they all play with another all-star, right? Jokic plays with, or an all-star level player, right? Jokic plays with Jamal Murray. SGA plays with Jalen Williams, who has been playing close to that level, really good, as a stretch five in Chet, has a pretty stacked team. Jason Tatum plays with Jaylen Brown, an all-star, also plays with other guys who've gotten all-star love too. Derek White, Drew Holiday. I mean, the worst player in that starting five is maybe Drew Holiday. Of course, this was an all-star early in his career too. LeBron plays with AD. I think LeBron is also deserving for first team All-NBA, but he plays with AD. Giannis has played with Dame. Booker and KD play together. You go down the list of all these top players, all of them have someone else, and Brunson hasn't for about 3 months now. And he's been dropping 30 on good efficiency a night with all kinds of defenses, with no one else to create a shot, really. That's not a knock on the other guys. And I don't mean to say that the other guys aren't contributing, because they do complement him perfectly, almost, in the sense that you have guys who can find their shot. Dante DiVincenzo is great at playing off Brunson, hunting shots. You guys are going to attack closeouts. I think Hart's ability to drive and finish at the rim is not the most efficient guy overall, but he gives you that. You have guys that help out in the glass, and you have guys that can cover for him on defense. So this is by no means to say that the other guys don't deserve credit, but it is what it is. I will say that Brunson is seeing a level of defensive attention that nobody else in the league really was seeing consistently in the regular season. Maybe you can't do that to Jokic because of his passing ability and because they have a lot of talent around him. There's a reason that them and Boston are the title favorites. So I think all of that considered, and you look at the advanced stats, it's tough not to have him certainly first team All-NBA. I think I would imagine he's probably, you know, there's a lot of people, I don't think this makes much sense, but there's a lot of people having top five MVP voting, but second team All-NBA. Since it's positionless, I'm definitely of the mind that it just be the top five players. I've always felt like most valuable players should just be the best player. And I think if you're saying, well, who's more valuable to their team, it should show up in their contributions, right? So there have been times LeBron didn't win it that one year in Miami, even though I think he was better than Derrick Rose. But Derrick Rose was able to contribute more in many ways, right? And, you know, there's statistics, all these ways to measure that. I think any way you look at it, Brunson's been one of the top five players in the league this year. And they're going to ultimately, you know, if they have a shot against Boston, they're going to need all these guys to show up that I talked about, but they're going to need him to play like a superstar. And he didn't game one, but he has a pretty long track record of doing that. So it'll be fascinating to see. And I'll also say, I think you know, I thought Mark Daniel is very deserving. Great job coaching Oklahoma City. They're a fun team. They've developed the youth really well. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just blossomed into, you know, top three or four player at worst. You know, a lot of people giving him MVP love too, and well-deserved. Chet, they've really brought along nicely, a guy that some people were like, does he fit? Is he a tweener? You know, he's going to struggle with some physicality, and that has held true, but he's also been deployed to be a pretty damn close to elite defensive player. They found creative ways to take advantage of his ball handling and shooting ability, as well as ability to crash the glass. So Daniel deserves a lot of credit, but if you think about what this lose, I mean, think about the starting lineup on day one was Brunson, Grimes, Randall, RJ, and Mitch. Mitch is back now, but only one of those players is still starting. You know, Grimes was replaced and then got traded. RJ got traded. And then his replacement in the starting lineup, OG, was hurt for a lot of games, right? I think he ended up playing 22 regular season games, which the Knicks were phenomenal in, but missed a lot of time. Randall, your second leading scorer, all NBA level player, certainly looked like he was on his way to his third all NBA team in 4 years. He gets hurt. Mitch hurt, right? And, you know, he made Precious into a pretty viable option at the five. You know, he's helped unlock DiVincenzo's game, and he's been flexible, right? A guy who didn't always have a lot of ball movement in his offense. He's allowed DiVincenzo to take those off movement threes, right? I think he's been very smart in how he's used Josh Hart. I think, you know, he's been creative in letting, you know, he is a guy you can tell Tibbs likes control, but he's let OG freelance in some similar ways to what he was allowing Emmanuel Quickley to do. But he said, no, you're OG, your defensive ability is probably on par with early career Kawhi. Go do you. And it's worked. And of course, more than anything else, you have to give credit to just the attitude this team has. And they've gotten the right guys, and Rhian Rose deserves a ton of credit there. But Tibbs has just coached his guys to play against every night, 82 games. And, you know, there are critics of it, so you're burning yourself out before the playoffs. They don't look like that in game one. They look ready to go. And Tibbs deserves a lot of credit. I thought he should have at least gotten some consideration for Coach of the Year, even though there were deserving candidates, given all of the adversity and the fact that they finished with the second best record. So we'll see what happens. I think it's one of the most fun times I can remember being a Knicks fan. It'll be a fun game tonight, probably interesting to see all the adjustments, and great to be, I'm happy to be there. So signing off, this is Stacey Patton. Once again, want to thank our sponsors, Bet Online, and let's go Knicks.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.